Our speaker today is Dr. Frederick F. Piskey, who is present with us today through the cooperation of the National Committee for a Free Europe. This organization has been formed to aid some of the democratic anti-communist leaders who are currently in exile. It has been doing a number of things in an effort to combat the spread of communism and also to try to stimulate resistance in Europe. One of the programs of the committee has been the broadcasting to countries behind the Iron Curtain, a program which is known as the Radio Free Europe broadcast. Our speaker today has had a good bit of experience in the newspaper field. He has been both a reporter and an editor. He's had a considerable amount of experience with the Hungarian trade union movement. He was active in the anti-Nazi underground during the war and was a leader in the Social Democratic Party after the liberation. He was forced to leave Hungary after the elections of 1947, and for the last year and a half has been lecturing in this country. His topic today will be conditions in Eastern Europe before and since the communist encroachment. Dr. Piskey.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, I should like to tell you that I intend to weary out your patience for a 40 minute with summing up the facts, so to say, with touching the main problems that we have had in by the communist domination, and to leave the time for questions. I'm looking forward to your questions because during my discussions here in your campus, I have heard that you are interested about labor problems, industrial problems, and you are informed and generally the situation or the communist aggression upon Eastern and Central Europe. Now, independently of that fact, I should like to state as a preliminary statement, I shouldn't be surprised if you wouldn't know too much about Hungary and about those Central European and Eastern European small nations. But I am quite sure that you certainly know that, including Eastern Germany, 11 countries behind the line coming down from the Baltic states to Albania, 11 countries are there which were equally determined after World War II by the same aggression, by the communist domination. These countries were one after the other taken over by communist minorities, and you certainly remember that democratic leaders were persecuted or even executed. So to say, in your eyes, I think there is no practical difference whether a Hungarian cardinal or a Polish bishop would be imprisoned. And that's true. If you will going to examine the situation in the various countries, you will find the same development with a very small difference. You will see a difference by timing. So to say, you will find it out that the countries concerned are on various stages of Bolshevization, but the way itself is the same. So if a Lithuanian expellee would be standing in my place today, I am quite sure you would be likely to hear the same facts, the same experiences, with a very tragic difference, with a practical difference, that the Baltic states have preceded Central and Eastern Europe with a couple of years, so they have already arrived to a higher stage of political development, using the Bolshevik terminology. They have already arrived to the stage of mass deportations, to the stage of systematic transplantation of unreliable Baltic population into internal Siberia. Now, on that way, you will realize and you will understand when we Central and Eastern European countries, particularly Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, from certain point of view, Yugoslavia and Albania. When we were confronted with communism, with the first attack of the communist minorities, we realized very quickly that we are on the same way, on the same track, and we are facing the same problems. Now, all the events of the last 5 years have proved this theory. So to say, the fate of the Central European states is behind, with 5 years, behind the Baltic development, but on the same track, on the same way. Among the Central European countries, you will find again that there are very small differences in timing. For instance, Hungary was taken over on the summer of 47 by a communist plot carried out inside the coalition government. And the same thing has ensued in Czechoslovakia in 48 on the February. Now, since that time, you will find all the steps taken by the Hungarian communists and the steps taken by the Czech communists in the same way with a 6-8 month difference. So the Hungarian Catholic churches, church and the Protestant churches were attacked in Hungary in 49 December, started the attack, and they liquidated the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestant leadership in 50 until the summer. Now in Czechoslovakia, it started in 50, and it's on the way, maybe you remember, for a couple of days appeared in the American newspapers a short statement that the Czechoslovakian cardinal is facing a trial and will be sent to prison with a couple of high-ranking Catholic priests. So the Czechoslovakian Mindszenty case is now on the way, just on the pattern of the Hungarian the Hungarian Mindszenty case, the original Mindszenty case, if you remember. That was the first point I wanted to underline before you, before I am going to use Hungary as an example. Now, as you heard, I am coming from Hungary, I am a Hungarian. But in that way you will understand that I am speaking not only for my own nation, for my own people, but for the others too. Hungary is particularly good example to become acquainted with the Moscow methods or means. We used to say that Hungary possessed all the basic characteristics which opposed from the beginning communism. And in spite of all these facts, you will find that Hungary is just so closely or strongly controlled than the other peoples. So I should like to refer to four factors. The first one is an ethnic factor. Hungary, maybe you know, is a funny country. It's just like an ethnic island wedged in between the great German masses and the Slavic masses in Eastern and Central Europe. So the Hungarian people during the centuries had all the time to preserve, to defend the national independence of Hungary. Now, when we were confronted with the Russian, with the Russian characteristics of the coming communism, the Hungarian people was very well aware of the fact that this approach or this attack will mean not only an attack against the Hungarian national independence, but a desperate attack against the Hungarian ethnic future, ethnic existence too. And we were again right, because after the communist takeover, the communist minority, headed by Moscow-trained experts, they started on a scientific way to transform the whole Hungarian history and to try not only to Bolshevize, but to Russianize the ethnically unreliable people, just in the same way as ensued on the Baltic states. Now you will find the same development, for instance, in Romania, which is a non-Slavic country. You will find the most spectacular Slavic propaganda in the Slavic countries, I mean in Czechoslovakia or in Poland. So the Russians were building up this way of propaganda too, very scientifically and very strongly. Now the second factor I wanted to underline is an economic one. Maybe you know that a great lot of the Eastern European countries, may I say so, with the exception of Eastern Germany and Czechoslovakia, better say Eastern Germany and the Czechs, not Czechoslovakia, all the countries are characteristically agriculture countries. So I should like to refer to your social studies that even in Russia, Lenin and Stalin had a great lot of troubles with the peasant question, with the peasantry as a political and as an economic question. Now, Hungary, which has a majority of farmers, agriculturists, 56% of the population, they opposed from the beginning desperately the Moscow-styled state-owned and state-controlled system of agriculture, and they wanted to keep the free small farming system, what we have developed after the war, accomplishing a land reform. They wanted to keep the free cooperative system, what we have developed. And since that time, they were struggling by all means against the Bolshevization of the agriculture. Now, the third point of view is a psychological one. Maybe that's the best known part of the European or Eastern European story, that Hungary, just like Poland, is one of the most religious countries. So when the communists were turning against all religions, dissolving Christian and Jewish church organizations equally, and imprisoning the Roman Catholic and Protestant leadership equally, these drastic arrangements made the Hungarian people through and through hostile to communism. Now the last, the fourth factor, is a historic fact, that Hungary is one of those countries which had experienced shortly after World War I, communist dictatorship. It happened in 1919, maybe you remember that after World War I, when Lenin seized the power, they started to build up the new communist dictatorships in the various central, in the weak spot of Europe, the Central and Eastern European countries. And Hungary has had a communist adventure which lasted not more than a few months. But they were quite enough to get acquainted with the police terror, with economic misery and so on. So all these basic characteristics or national qualities opposed communism. And you will find it out that these are not only theoretic statements, because we in Hungary, we practically proved that by two elections. Now it's funny to say, because one of these elections, general elections, were a typical free and democratic election, and the other one was a typical Moscow-style election. So from that point of view, is Hungary again a spectacular example, because Hungary was the only one country behind the Iron Curtain line which was, so to say, permitted by Moscow to hold a free and independent election according to the Yalta Pact. Now, naturally, after the communists have seen the results of the Hungarian elections, they have strongly prohibited to hold such an election in Romania or in Czechoslovakia or in the other countries. So it happened in 45, November, that when the Hungarian people went to the parliamentary election, that the 83% of the population voted for the Western-style democratic parties, and only 17% of the population voted for communists. Now,